wanted to reiterate one thing, add one thing, and then do just the first part of that meditation we did this morning. And if your mind wanders, I might suggest you add the connected breathing that we talked about yesterday.
Could I just ask it? I'm not sure if you're meaning the same one. We just did one meditation this morning. I don't remember.
But yesterday I talked about connected breathing.
No. The question was, it seemed at one point we were doing a contemplation, or at least that's what happened to me. And that was new for me.
I was going through the four thoughts.
I just wanted to be sure kind of, that was what I was supposed to be doing.
That was exactly what you were supposed to be doing. All right, I read this before, but I think it's what does liberate suffering? The moment you have some glimpse that you are bigger than what you are thinking or feeling is a healing moment. Through meditation, noticing this disillusion of a solid self is encouraged by drawing your attention to the sense of self itself. To the sense of being itself, rather than to a momentary reaction. The moment that false sense of I starts to dissipate, you begin to feel different. If you trust in the space that opens up, you can discover a deeper support than the reactivity of your ego. This deeper support is the inner refuge, and this is your protection. And then the other one, let's explore how we observe and what kind of awareness we are talking about when we refer to open awareness. For example, I can look at a flower and simply be there with my perception. I'm not saying anything about the flower, like that it's too red or not fresh enough. I'm just experiencing the flower without judgment. As I continue to experience the flower in this way, the liveliness around the flower emerges. When the one who is looking is not engaging the thinking, moving, analyzing mind, he or she can perceive nakedly and directly and discover the perfection or completeness in the moment. This is the experience of being the refuge. Everything is always going more subtle, always. I remember when I was at Londre in India in 79, Sakya Trizin talked about, well, he said, be wary. There's a point in these teachings where you become like a snake in a bamboo tube. You can only go forward or back. When things start to open up for you, they don't close up. If it's uncomfortable, you draw up any distraction you possibly can to not experience it. I remember telling Ayin Rinpoche one day, my heart chakra is closed. He said, no, it's not closed. It was already open. It's not closed. Where are you? It took me a while to even understand that. And I was at a Indian pre-wedding get-together of the Beatty family. Rinpoche was the teacher of a couple members of that family. So that's how I ended up at this gathering. It was a very, very wealthy industrial family. And the head of it, who is now Baba Beatty, he had been, you know, traveling all over the world and all this. And then at one point he lost the use of his legs and he decided to leave the business and follow a spiritual path. I had never met him, but I heard about him because his wife was Sister Mira. She was the first Westerner to become a nun and became brought the Karmapa to the West and all of that. This was a long time ago. And she left her family. Her children were grown, but she left the family with the blessings of the family to become a Tibetan Buddhist nun. All right, so I'm sitting there, uncomfortable in my body, of course. And I'm sitting in the room where Baba Beatty is in his wheelchair, chewing betel nut and spitting the red juice into a... And I'm watching people come in and bow to him. And I mean, seems like there's hundreds of people and they're constantly. And I'm just saying they're watching. And then for maybe a span of a minute, certainly not more, probably less, no one came in. And he looked over at me and he said, Anila, there's two ways to be in this world. Those who look out at the world through their two eyes and those who look in at the world through their third eye. Stop denying who you are. And then people just flowed back into the room. That's another time that I can remember the whole scene. It's not a story because it's a felt perception that is arising. And it was a teaching, an incredible teaching that I started to understand the wrong word, but I started to experience what was meant several years later. Looking out the world through the third eye would be, in refuge context, would be finding somebody to take refuge in out there. Looking in at the world through the third eye would be first the inner refuge and then becoming the refuge itself. Because this whole world, every interaction we have, everything, is not experienced out there. It's in here. Everything we see, everything we feel, everything we hear, it's all experienced right here. Any comments?
All experienced right here, or all experienced right here?
Well, the only place we can experience all that is through our senses.
Yeah. I just didn't want to get stuck
in it's not the brain.
Yeah.
It's here. Well, through the third eye, which is... Any confusion? I can be confusing.
I find there's still a disconnect between seeing things that way, remembering that all of these events are in fact internal, and we have no idea really what's out there, if anything. But then the practical mind takes over and says, hey, wait a minute, that bird is singing. You know, that sunbeam is coming through. That's an actuality. Even though I have to admit that the experience of that bird and that sunbeam are inside. But this question of saying it's all emptiness, I don't find that satisfactory.
I haven't used that word, have I?
I noticed you.
Okay,
yeah.
I stay really away from that.
Yeah, because it's not that everything's a blank slate out there. It's that our only experience of it is interior. And then to turn that eye around and look deep inside, that's something that we try to do, of course.
And any moment we have a peak experience, it's almost as if the experience we're having is much, much larger than our conceptual idea of ourselves. And so that is what creates the peak experience, because it's beyond relative conception. Understanding. I'm just kind of searching for words that won't give you a place to hang your hat. Because we're looking for that place to hang our hat. Yes?
Bountifulness? I just asked that because I found two words that have helped me understand better. The other day night, I don't know, in Nalanda, emptiness came up. A woman there said she'd been somewhere like India or something and had been given a different word, which was bountifulness, I think. And I could be totally wrong about that. I was trying to remember it, but it was bountiful or something. It was a way of saying not that emptiness maybe was not expressing it as clearly.
Well, emptiness isn't saying something's not there, but it's saying that anything we put there, even this whole of samsara, is impermanent. But filled with potency, filled with, energy. Yeah, I mean, it's not. It's just It's not nothing. And that's one of the reasons I stay away from the word, because it causes so much confusion. But in many ways, we've been approaching it. And spaciousness, same thing.
Yeah, possibly the word was boundaryless.
Yeah.
That's sort of like spaciousness. Yeah.
Without boundaries.
Without boundaries, yeah.
Which one? And John Young said, suggested, offered, whatever, what's the word, distress as a choice in other than suffering.
Yes. Any angst is suffering. Distress is suffering. Samsara is suffering, even if we don't know it. Because even what we think makes us happy is impermanent and dissolves and goes away. And since innately we know that, but yet we're so hooked in, anything we have, we hold on to tightly because there's already that fear that it's going to dissipate. And we've already identified with it, personalized it. My house, my 4,000 foot, I've never even been in a 4,000 foot house, but my car, my degree, me, I. Can't take it with us.
But also non-material things, like I have a story of my sadness. Is that also?
That's a constriction. So if you don't see the root of the sadness, which is not the story, that conceivably will accompany you when you pass from this life and set up the causes and conditions for your next experience. Conceivably. It's much harder to become enlightened after you die if you have to go through the bardo. Another Ani Tenzin Palmo story. She had told Sakya Trizin, that was during the Slumdre also, that she was so looking forward to going through the bardo and experiencing it. And he said, "Oh, Anila, you don't want to go into the bardo. It's easier here." It's like thinking about being depressed and becoming depressed. Two totally separate things. Reading about the bardo, thinking about it, all of that, and going through the emotional experience 100,000 times fold of what we go through in here, and realizing our true nature through that. That's difficult. This is our chance. Everything is magnified. It's actually, they say in the text, seven times. But it's bad enough the way it is now.
Yeah.
Let's meditate.